Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 64, being recorded on the 11th of February, 2015, with special guest Dave Royals. I'm Sujit DeMello, and on Skype with me I have Evan Basilik and Kale Teeter, and our special guest, Dave. Dave, can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello, hello. I am a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft, based out of Philadelphia. So I grew up in New York, then about 2 years ago I came down to Philadelphia to work at Comcast as an engineer on their product development team, where I helped build their applications for Xbox 360, Xbox One, PlayStation. Did that for about an 8-month stint before jumping over to technical evangelism at Microsoft, where it's been great. So now I work with students and startups across, we'll say, the country, but for the most part I'm kind of stationed across the East Coast.
Excellent. And I heard you work very closely with David Crook, who we spoke to last week.
Yes.
And you guys often work together, which is nice. But you kind of have a specialty that he didn't seem to have, which is in the gaming industry. Is that correct?
Yeah, so he still has a gaming background, but he's definitely more of a numbers and data guy. We'll put it that way. That's definitely more of his passion.
Right. Machine learning is what he talked about a lot.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's definitely his thing.
And you seem to like helping gamers use our technologies.
Absolutely. Front-end web and gaming is my passion.
Excellent. So, tell us, I mean, like, how do you engage with these? Well, first of all, how do you find these gamer types, and then how do you engage with them?
A few different methods. So if I don't have to work just into my market, which is Philadelphia, Baltimore, and a bit of D.C., then I kind of go on Twitter and I stay active in that scene. So I just kind of look for hashtags or see what other friends are doing. I creep around different forums like the Unreal Engine or Unity. They're my two favorite tools right now. Or I do quite a bit with HTML5 gaming. So I use WebGL for 3D and Canvas for 2D. So a lot of lurking in forums, just reaching out and seeing what people are working on and then trying to spark up a conversation.
Wow. And what's the, like, how much of this gaming is happening in the cloud, in Azure, for example?
So that's actually a very good question because, Microsoft, we have obviously Azure, right? Azure Podcast, you're listening to this, you're well aware of the cloud at this point. So we don't have I'd hope so. So we surprisingly don't have the largest initiative around gaming in the cloud right now. That's something I've been pushing for about the last 12 months that I've been here. And what I'm trying to do is make it easier for developers to understand how to embrace the cloud to do things like leaderboards. Mm. So Prime 31 is a plugin manufacturer for Unity. So I'm using his plugin to connect to Azure. So I'd create an Azure mobile service on my BizSpark account. And then from Unity, I would use this Prime 31 plugin to talk to my mobile service, and I could make RESTful calls to do things like post to leaderboards. So I could get scores, a unique ID, a person's name, and this was platform agnostic. So as long as you have the ability to make RESTful calls, you can hit these leaderboards. And Unity has a www function, which allows you to hit the internet.
Okay.
So, at that point, you're good to go. As long as you know how to write code, it's pretty straightforward.
So the Prime 31 plugin for Unity, that's mobile services aware, or is that a generic?
So that is that's all done in C#, and it's a DLL that is actually a plugin for Unity itself. So that plugin only works for Windows Phone and Windows 8 because it has very specific features that we're using WinRT, mm-hmm. but if you know how to write C# and use a RESTful interface, then you can write your own. And there's absolutely nothing stopping you from doing that inside of Unity. Or, even better, Something I commonly encourage people to look into is GameSparks. That's GameSparks. And it's a development studio largely based out of the UK, but they do have a New York branch. And they are really leading the way. So all of their servers are running on Azure, so they're renting our machines. But they abstract a lot of this work from you. So you're still making RESTful calls, but it'll work across Unreal Engine, HTML5, Unity, a number of different gaming platforms. So I really push people towards that way because the first 10,000 users are free. So most developers never even get remotely close to that. So it's kind of like they're making their money off the whales, which are few and far between. But it still gives an opportunity for younger or novice developers to really get some skin in the game and understand how to program against Azure.
So that one would be leaderboards as a service? Is that what we got there?
Absolutely. Everything from like leaderboards as a service to push notifications. Maybe you want to sync saves across multiple devices, right? Maybe I buy your game on iOS, and I want to, you know, I play it when I'm waiting in line for the supermarket. But what happens when I get back home and I'm in my PC and I want to load up that save again? Wouldn't it be awesome if I could just have my world persist throughout it, right? I'm only exchanging small amounts of JSON data, and I can just load up my scene right there on my desktop when I get home.
So wait a minute. So if I understand the architecture right, mm-hmm. GameSparks is leaderboard and some of this other stuff as a service.
Yes.
But it's sitting on top of Azure Mobile Services, so it's a PaaS platform. Well, really, it's almost a SaaS platform. Well, no, it's probably PaaS. PaaS on top of PaaS.
Yep. It's PaaS, yep.
So that they actually layer them, then.
Yes.
So the GameSparks is taking advantage of all the power of Azure. Yep. Then the developers can abstract all of that by leveraging GameSparks. Oh, that's cool.
So you have no idea that they're even using Azure. Only reason I knew it was because they had it in like documentation somewhere. And I know our UK developers or evangelists work very closely with them. And once I saw this, I thought, oh my goodness, this is amazing. We've got to get on board with it. So developers have no idea they're even using Azure. Because of how easily this team abstracts it,
and you know, once you do cross that 10,000 user limit, like what, you know, do you know what the pricing works at? Is it like super expensive beyond that?
I want to say for some reason like $300 like stands out in my mind for this.
I'm looking at it right now. They actually say 2 cents per player. Past the 10,000.
So now I'm looking, if you, the first pricing model, if I click up from 10,000, which is free, mm-hmm. and I go up to the next model up, which is 20,000, it says it's $200 a month.
That would be right, yeah.
Yeah, that's 50 gigs of file storage or 40 gigs of data transfer, 40 million push notifications, wow. or 40 million API calls. Like,
well, let's be honest, if you have 10,000 users, you're probably okay paying $200.
Yeah, put it this way, if you have, so 10,000 is free. So this is a 20,000 mark. If you have 20,000 users and you're not making $200 a month to pay for the cloud, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider how much we offer for BizSpark for startups, right? So that's Microsoft Software Suite for free on top of all this. So, so this is a nice deal. So I push everyone towards GameSparks. I mean, I don't know anyone who works there. I just look at this and I see and I think, like, this is the best thing for cloud gaming services right now.
I mean, that seems like the ultimate win because, right, so we built this platform that, you know, GameSparks then says they don't have to care about scale, they don't have to care about it, they just leverage the components. But that allows them to really focus on shipping something that works on it. Looks like, I was just looking at theirs, it looks like they have every platform you can imagine. They get to focus on that instead of the infrastructure stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And infrastructure is expensive, right? So it definitely benefits them to take advantage of Azure and not have to buy the hardware themselves because who knows how many users they're going to have, right? Maybe GameSparks is slow to get adoption, right? So therefore, they don't want to buy 100 servers or physical pieces of hardware to keep on-premises. So in that case, what they're likely doing here is maybe they have some on-prem things and some off-premises, and they can easily scale as they get more users into the cloud.
Yeah, coincidentally, we had a local Azure user group meeting tonight, and one of the guy that was presenting, he's in a similar role to you. He's a cloud solution architect, mm-hmm. But he was talking about one of the customers he worked with. They saved so much money by layering on top of some of the Azure components that they could afford to take all that money they saved and hire another developer, which is huge for a tiny company.
Definitely. Like, not everyone can afford $100,000 or $150,000 a year for another engineer. And that's cheap, right? That's modest. I'm not even going to tell you what the contractors at Comcast got paid. Right? So when I see things like this, I think, like, this is the future of gaming. Especially as I'm getting older and older, so I have less time to play, so my time is more valuable for games, right? It's not so much the money, it's every minute that I'm playing, it needs to be worth my while. So that's when I find games that really can take advantage of things like cloud saves are amazing. I can play while I'm in the supermarket, and then as soon as I get home, I can pick up that game right then and there on my desktop or my Xbox or whatever else.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Now, besides leaderboards, what else can you leverage in the cloud for a game? Like, what else can you do in the cloud? What other processing is there to do, I suppose?
So we have things like push notifications, right? So I'm sure people want to see Clash of Clans, right? Wildly popular
mm-hmm.
game.
Mm-hmm.
So they do an outstanding job of understanding push notifications. So my girlfriend has a 7-year-old son, and he got me into Clash of Clans. Say, hey, come on, grow your village, and you can join my clan, and we can go take on everyone else. I said, yeah, okay, I'll do this. So I have an iPad 2 at home. It's getting old, but I can still play Clash of Clans. I started playing this, and I put it down. I do a lot of traveling for work, so I'll bring it with me on trips. And at night, before I go to sleep, I go to pick it up, and I think, oh, my goodness, it's giving me these notifications saying, oh, Diego's being attacked, so go help him out. Or someone's attacking your village. Here are the results. So in real time, someone can send me a notification saying, hey, this is happening. Go help out this individual. So that's how push notifications can really add a lot to your game, in that it's encouraging the user to go back and check out your game multiple times throughout the day instead of just once a day or once every few days, right? Right. You're getting a repeat engagement, which therefore will hopefully lead to more sales and more usage of your application.
So it's actually kind of inverse, right? The push notification ends up pulling you in.
Yes.
Right, versus, you know, you having to go look and see what the status is later.
Exactly.
So that sounds like a lot of processing to be able to send, figure out when to send these push notifications to each player.
Oh, yeah.
And where is all that? Is all that part of this GameSpark system, or do you have to spin up a different VM for that? How does that generally
work? So GameSparks has that, but if you want to write it yourself, you can easily use Event Hub within Azure itself, right? Okay. So we expose all these things. So you can just have an Event Hub that you'd open up either a virtual machine or a virtual machine yourself inside of Azure, and you can tie in these notifications. So that's pretty straightforward to do. Another thing would be like I said, cloud saves.
Could you clarify that for me, please? You said time the notifications. This thing is going to be continuously running, right? Because
the game.
Yeah, but because you have to do it for different players, right? Every player is in a different state.
Yes.
Right, and so you're constantly looking at all the players and figuring out what state each player is in and which notification they should get.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So this is something that's set up like an engine that's always running in that VM. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So with Event Hub, what it's doing is it's streaming millions of events per second to multiple applications. So it's basically push notifications to these different devices that the user is registered or engaged with. So you could say on your server, you're saying, okay, the current user is inactive, but they've been attacked. So if inactive and attacked, then push to user, right? So you're kind of raising these different flags.
I see.
And based on which flags are raised, you can push these to the different users' devices.
Okay.
One of the other things, Dave, I was wondering about is like chat, because that's like a big thing with games usually is getting, you know, you ping your friend and say, hey, get on here. We gotta set up a session here to do this game. So is that something that you see often? And is that something people usually implement themselves, or they rely on something else, like maybe some of the Azure stuff to do?
So in this case, if you want to do it all through Azure yourself, you could use Azure Service Bus, right, which is a messaging queue. So that basically takes all these messages, puts them into a list, and then it can say, you came first, you came second, you came third. Therefore, I'm going to display them in this order. And you're really queuing things up as a result for when you want to see people, have people view these messages, and mm-hmm. in which order. Mm-hmm. So you could handle that in this way. Or, again, GameSparks offers that as well. I haven't dived too deep into this part of GameSparks yet. But, yeah, I know that they have chat queues in there, too.
They have the chat as well. Okay.
So how would people – I mean, so I guess, you know, maybe – so 2 years ago, right, or 3 years ago, I guess people would have stood this stuff up on their own, but mm-hmm. I mean, that had to be part of the driver of people not doing it, because it was not just expensive, but complicated.
Definitely.
Right.
Oh,
I mean,
definitely.
Some of this stuff sounds non-trivial. I mean, I was a developer for a long time, and it sounds non-trivial just hearing it.
Right. But I think the issue a lot of people run into, and I'm noticing this as I do these webcams across the U.S., so I have 12 of them across the East Coast over the next 2 months. And I've already done 3, New York, D.C., and yesterday at Pittsburgh. And I'm noticing that a lot of these developers, especially enterprise ones, they're not familiar with the cloud, nonetheless, what Azure is. So I think a disconnect point that we run into is people keep hearing this buzzword, right, cloud. And even when I first heard this a year and a half ago when I was at Comcast, I thought, like, how would I ever take advantage of this thing? It sounds like snake oil that somebody's trying to sell me. Right? Between Amazon, who is the current juggernaut, and then Microsoft is number 2. What is this cloud, right? But it wasn't until later on that I actually had to use it myself for work that I thought, oh, this makes sense. Okay. So I think the best bet is to break it down into small steps that are relevant to what people are doing in their daily work lives, right?
So what do you mean by that?
Like if I try to explain, I could take an entire day explaining PaaS, IaaS, SaaS to people, right? 3 completely different things. And I can talk about how a web role is different from a web worker and VM and a website to all these people. So what I decided to do was figure out a handful of ways that I use them in my modern life as a front-end web developer and as a game developer. And now when I give these talks, I say, here are practical use cases and examples of how I use Azure. And from there, I start to write small, simple tutorials. Like if you want to understand how to write leaderboards for a Unity game, I have 4 tutorials on how to do that, and you can use my my Azure mobile service. So I actually have a dedicated BizSpark account just for other people to test leaderboards on my mobile service. So I'm giving that to them for free with the code to say, hey, here's how you can learn. Take my code, and out of the box, it just works.
Mm.
So I think once I break it down in those small steps, people say, oh, now I get how to use this, where previously, years ago, right, if I'm going back to the arcades in the 90s, making leaderboards are crazy. Right? You're generally just stuck with what you have on that local arcades machine. And then towards the late 90s, early 2000s, we finally had internet connectivity, and we're able to share leaderboards across the world.
Yeah, but that's not all good, because, you know, we all thought we were good in our little region.
Exactly.
And then we find out we really are horrible compared to everybody else.
Yeah, and you see, like, the Western world or Eastern world, see how the friends in Japan are doing, and they're just absolutely dominating our scores.
Yeah. So we got to be careful. Progress is not always good here, right?
No. Yeah, so it's overwhelming. It's a lot at once. That's why I suggest to people pretty often is, take a step back and understand what is it you're looking to do exactly, because chances are a tutorial exists on it already.
Now, Dave, when you talk to these game developers, and let's say they're using Unity to build some game, and now
yes.
they want to plug it into some kind of back end,
mm-hmm.
how much of a challenge is it to get them to understand the Azure programming model? And you just mentioned that, you know, you try to break it down into steps for them, but just in terms of getting them used to the overall Azure programming model, what is that a big learning curve for generally for folks, or what's your experience been there?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I think it's a number of reasons that contribute to that. The first of which is, everyone wants to get into gaming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many of us grew up playing games, and it's like the most ideal opportunity for working in programming, right? I mean, no one wants to be a SharePoint developer, let's be honest. But a lot of us end up doing it, you know? We all grew up playing Legend of Zelda or Super Mario Brothers and thinking, this is what I want to do. But it's extremely difficult to get into that market. So now we have either a lot of novice developers getting into it or a lot of people who have left their old corporate jobs to get into gaming. It's a completely new style of learning. So often what I find is people want to start learning C#, and I say, okay, if you learn C#, perfect. You can absolutely rock this Azure thing. Or if you have JavaScript skills, no problem, because now we accept Node.js, right? Mm-hmm. And personally, I prefer JavaScript over C# for most of my projects too. So when I get to this point, I see, okay, you understand C#, you're one step ahead of the game, especially if you're using Unity, which is by far the most popular game tool at this point. So C#, you're using Unity, perfect. You're already ahead of the game. Then from there, I try to suggest that people look at some of the tutorials we've already done. Like I said, the Prime 31 example that I used, which works out pretty well, but we still haven't done a fantastic job of teaching people. And by that, I mean, I look at Microsoft's internal Azure team who works with game developers, and it's called Thunderhead. And what they do is they work with teams like Infinity Ward or the folks who worked on Destiny, right?
Yeah.
So that, right, all running on Azure servers. Here's how we can not Destiny, I'm sorry.
The mech war, Titanfall.
Titanfall, yeah. yes. All the Destiny, right, that developer's in Bellevue. I work out of there a lot. Yeah, so yeah, you're right. It was Titanfall. So for Titanfall, for example, we have engineers on the Azure team who work on a team specifically designed to help out the large game companies. So what I'm pushing for internally is to get a lot of that to be forward-facing or outward-facing to work with our smaller developers, right? So rather than just give it away to the AAAs and say, hey, you have all this outstanding talent, these APIs you've written, why don't we give this to the smaller developers and let them have a blast with it, right? We have a lot of the code done, and we have outlines, templates. Give it away, get people on board. So hopefully we start to wake up to that and get more developers on board.
So what do you see? Because, you know, one of the things, one of the recurring themes we have on our podcast is the fact that, you know, if you go back 10 years, it was, you know, if it wasn't a Microsoft stack, we really weren't interested, right?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't want to talk to anybody. But now, right, we're shipping Office on Android, we're shipping Office on iPhone, mm-hmm. I mean, everything. And Azure is, you know, we changed the name, right? It went from Windows Azure to Microsoft Azure because it's bring whatever you want. Do you find that that resonates with these game developers, or do you find that they still kind of just go, oh, you guys must only talk .NET?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think Microsoft is definitely changing their image, right? I've only been there 13 months, and even then, like, I'd always use a PC, but I have a MacBook Pro. I'm a 20-something who's working on open source projects all day at Microsoft with a MacBook Pro. Like, it could not be any different from what the image was 5 or 10 years ago, right? So once I go around and start showing people these products that we're doing and how we're open sourcing everything, right? Our Roslyn compiler, open source. .NET Core, open source, right? Azure on LAN, ASP.NET, like all these things are open source. Continuous updates to Spartan and IE, right? Like this is a completely different version of Microsoft from what we had before. It's not your grandfather's Microsoft, right? I can definitely see people starting to finally come on board with us and start to adopt our mentalities. And I think that started with, in gamers in particular, when we had our XNA program for Xbox 360. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Yep.
Right? So it was the C# gaming framework that allowed you to write games for PC, Windows Phone, and Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, the Mono team has helped out quite a bit, and developers have started to adopt Mono Game, which is the open source implementation of XNA. So now we had more developers on board, and now XNA, right, works on the Mono version of it, which is Mono Game, works on PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4. It works across the board.
So we're really getting back to kind of our roots then in some ways up here. We're providing the tooling and, you know, these components for you, but we don't really care what you run.
Right. We want to be as platform agnostic as possible.
Yeah. But Windows will be better, but that's kind of an aside to it.
Definitely, right? We're writing that native functionality into there, right? So people ask, how do I get started on Windows 10, and how do I do HoloLens and all these other cool things and VR and stuff? And the answer is universal app platform, right? We don't want to tie you into anything. We're saying, you want to write for something? Write it once for – you can do Windows 8 right now using UAP, universal app platform. And it'll work on Windows Phone, Windows 8, and then when we finally get Xbox on board, which we did announce during Connect, that yes, we're all gonna. It's gonna be one unified code base for all of this. Or even better, right? You can use Xamarin and you can use applications. So you take your C# skills, go across the board. Or Cordova. I was giving a talk at the Pittsburgh.net meeting yesterday on Visual Studio tools for Cordova. So here I am with an iPhone and a MacBook Pro showing people how to make Android, Windows Phone, and iOS applications using JavaScript, which is not even our .NET. And I could care less what you're using, right? I just want you to make applications. Because you know what? the better your application becomes, the more likely you are to have to embrace the cloud at some point, right?
You need to scale if you do well.
That's it. Yep. Yeah. So I'd want you to get on board as fast as possible and start making things and iterating, right? Making fast, get it out the door and learn from it. And in the end, start embracing the cloud. Because again, if you use the cloud, you're platform agnostic. You're often making RESTful calls, right, through HTTP. And at that point, doesn't matter what device you're using. Anything can use HTTP.
That's cool. It's amazing to, for me at least, right, because I come from kind of the server, enterprise server world, you know, a SQL guy for a long time. I mean, we were kind of agnostic that way, right? We don't care who's calling into the database, we just want to sell the database.
Yeah.
Right? That was our world. Now, but it's really neat to hear that that's even kind of the direction, you know, even for something like game development, right, which seems so far removed from server, enterprise server stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Actually, I was going to ask Dave, like, just what he just said, Evan, which is databases. So, you know, what kind of databases do gamers gravitate towards? Are they the relational type or the NoSQL type?
I have no idea, to tell you the truth.
Oh, okay. So they use the service offering, or is that
bundled into service? Yeah, I think most of that is over most of their heads. Certainly over mine, because I know very, very little about SQL, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I guess they must be doing it. I mean, I think that really, Sajid, is probably driven a lot by the fact that we've had the mobile services, right? Just mobile services is backed by a database.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
it builds the database for you on the fly. It uses all the link capabilities and all that kind of stuff to do that. So they're using it. They just don't know and don't care.
That's the truth.
That's good. Right. That's very good. So they can focus on the game, you know, instead of all this other nonsense.
Definitely, definitely. Especially as I'm doing talks on ASP.NET Web API right now, and I was doing a lot with mobile services, people are like, well, how would I use one or the other? Or, you know, what if I only know JavaScript? What if I only know C#? I said, oh, the world is your oyster, because, boy, we have some things for you.
Yep.
That's your stock answer, right? It doesn't matter what language they use.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, like, and I think a lot of people are hesitant when I say this, right? And they're like, no, Microsoft has that. You guys made .NET, so you want C# developers, right? And I work with recruiters quite a bit. So the 4 or 5, 6 main schools I work with in the Philly area are Drexel, UPenn, Temple, Villanova, Penn State. And all the students, when they sit down with me for an interview, they'll say, well, so I know Java, but I don't know how you feel about it. I said, awesome. You know Java? Great. If you know that, we can easily bring you on board to C#, right? Because it's often seen as the best parts of C++ and Java without all the crap.
Right.
So if you know Java, you can go from there. So if you know an object-oriented language and then maybe a functional language like JavaScript, the world is your oyster at that point. That's all I'm looking for.
That's amazing. It really is that, like, I mean, because I'm still trying to think through. I don't know about Kale, about you and Sajid, but I was doing the math on the whole you're not your grandfather's Microsoft and saying, wait a minute, he's talking about me, I think. It is really amazing to see that it just don't care, right? I mean, use whatever you want. So where do you see some of this going? Like, what do you see as kind of the, you know, the thing that you see people asking for that we don't provide yet today?
So what I would like, between what I would like to see and what developers are asking for, I go to a lot of developer conferences, right? So I go to PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo, both in Seattle and in Boston. I'm actually in Boston right now. I go to GDC, the Game Developer Conference in Europe. I go to the one in San Francisco every year, and also in LA earlier last year. And a common thing I'm seeing across the board is they want live services. And by that, I mean gamer tags. They want access to my avatars.
So like Xbox Live when you sell.
Yes, okay. Yes. Mm. Gamer tags, achievements, leaderboards, gamer score. So what Microsoft will reveal this year or next, I can't say. There's some things I do know, some things I don't. So I'd rather just play it safe and say, believe me, I want everything to come out that you want to come out as well. There are a number of reasons of why it's not all exposed immediately, but I'll let them explain that. So that's by far the most common request I get, especially for a Windows Phone developer, where they say, hey, I'm writing for your platform, but why can't I have achievements or avatars? Or why is your avatar API not open source, right? It's someone else was writing these silly avatar APIs. And they work really well, but Microsoft tends to close them down from time to time. So that is probably the biggest thing I'm hearing at this point. And also, I obviously Steam is a very big competitor, and I absolutely love Steam. I have more games than I know what to do with. But an issue from what I've seen with that is they have ancient APIs. So unless you're a C++ ninja, good luck with that. So I see what the competition looks like, and I have bright hopes for what we're showing and revealing. So yes, I would like to see live services exposed to everybody. So that includes iOS developers, Android developers. I would love for them to make their games in Unity, Marmalade, Unreal, and have avatars able to jump into the game. So that is by far the most commonly requested thing that I'm hearing at this point.
Cool.
Awesome. And I know you briefly mentioned HoloLens. What kind of reaction has that gotten from gamers?
Oh, that has been absolutely fantastic. So I've gotten quite a few. So doing evangelism, right? I'm working in the community all day, every day. So half my job is programming. The other half is working with the community. And as soon as our new products come out, I always get dozens and dozens of emails right away. Hey, can I get a Kinect? Or can I get a Health Band? Can I get a Surface Pro 3? And the moment HoloLens came out, it was, hey, when can I get a HoloLens? And I just zip my lips and I say, they will tell you when they are ready. And I can only mimic the things they've said at Kinect or Build or whatever, and that is start writing for the Universal App Platform, and that will get you ready.
Right.
But yes, so what I will tell you, though, is, right, so our biggest competitor, I guess, at this point is likely the Oculus Rift, mm-hmm. right? So it's the VR platform. They were based out of Santa Monica and then bought up by Facebook earlier last year. So now John Carmack and what is his name? The gentleman from it's like the DirectX programming god. I don't know why I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Sorry, me can't help you there.
Give me 1 second, and I will tell you what his name is. The gentleman who is basically the king of DirectX and writing those books. I'll see if I can find his name. And John Carmack, like the king of OpenGL and Doom fame, both hopped on board with Oculus. So that tells you something, right? Cliff Bleszinski and all these other folks, they get on board and they say, this is the future. And I agree. Oculus is awesome. But that's virtual reality. And by that, I mean you have this lens over your face and over your eyes, and you're engrossed inside that world. Certainly has its ups and downs. A advantage of this is that I'm sucked into this world. I'm fully engrossed. My eyes are wrapped into this environment. The downfall, however, is that my eyes are in this environment, so I'm not aware of anything going on around me. Right, someone can come up behind me and poke me or grab my feet, whatever else. Whereas what we're doing with the HoloLens is it's AR, it's augmented reality. So we're layering materials or applications on top of your world in a 3D space. And by that I mean we can lock something to in front of your vision. So the best use case I can think of is I have a standing desk at home. I have a laptop in the middle, and I have two monitors on either side. So that takes up quite a bit of real estate, right? And to look at this, I have to keep shifting my head left and right. That's fine. But what if I could draw these monitors onto this screen, and this screen is actually a pair of glasses on my eyes? So I'm still aware of what's going on. I can still see my desk. I can grab my coffee. I can reach for it. I can eat my breakfast while I have these glasses on. And as I turn my head left, I see one monitor, and I have Visual Studio there. In the middle, I have my browser open, so I can see what it is I'm looking for as I'm coding. And on the right, I have my actual application running. So how convenient would that be?
That is cool.
Right? So I can't talk much about the HoloLens other than about what I've said right there.
Yep.
But what I can tell you, that is the absolute future. It isn't to say that Oculus isn't the future, but they are two very different futures.
Yeah. But I was just thinking, as you spoke, though, it looks like the cloud will play a big role in this because all this data now has to be, I guess, shared, right, with different players, what they're seeing on their screens. I mean, you can imagine the amount of processing that's required to handle all that, the 3D imagery.
Yeah. Oh, so when they actually show you how, like, at some point they'll show you the making of the HoloLens. I think it's going to blow people away when you see how large it was and how small it got. And the first thing I thought of when I saw that was, my father was in the Navy in the early 80s, and he was an intelligence officer. And he said that they had mainframe computers on the aircraft carriers that were the size of rooms, and they would do something as simple as, like, word processing, right?
Yeah.
But then he looks at what we have now, and he has an iPhone, and he says, my phone and my computer is larger than the mainframe computers that took up entire rooms 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely.
Right? So it's kind of wild to see how fast technology advances, especially when we have competing technologies and companies really starting to go after it. So for context, a Wired magazine had an outstanding article this month covering largely Satya Nadella and his change at Microsoft. And they had a graph in there about three or four pages into this article where they showed investment made into virtual reality over the last 6 or 7 years. So, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, it was a handful of dollars. And it gradually got up a little. And in the last 18 months or so, it grew exponentially, about 100 times what it was just 2 years ago. Like, somebody caught on board and said, okay, this is the future.
This is the future. Yep.
And I'm just glad that we started it years ago.
Yep. I'm very excited about that. Well, Dave, thank you very much. This has been a stimulating conversation, no doubt.
Yeah, thank you. Great, Dave.
Yeah, thanks.
So anything else for Dave before we let him go and so he can get some sleep?
No, this is awesome. Thanks for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. I'm sorry to put it off for so long. You see, I'm a traveling Wilbury, so every week I'm racking it up. I had 100,000 miles last year, so.
Wow. Well, best of luck with your class tomorrow and in Boston, and we hope to talk to you again some other time in the future.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.